I want to backtrack a little bit tonight before we move into the end of chapter 26 of Proverbs. I want you to go back to Proverbs chapter 1. So we have a group of books in the Old Testament that we call the wisdom literature. That would be the books of Job, Psalms, Proverbs that we're in right now, Ecclesiastes, and the book of Song of Solomon. The wisdom literature is about helping people learn what wisdom is and what it's not, what it looks like, and how do you get it. By the time you get to the end of the book of Proverbs, he's talking a lot about people that are fools, that are sluggards, meaning don't work, don't have any interest in working. And in the chapter that we're looking at right now, he's talking about people that are what I would call busybodies, minding other people's business, and whisperers. We'll come back to that in a moment. So in wisdom literature, it talks about what is the difference between a person who is wise and a person who is a fool. And it has to do with a very simple thing, and that is a fool is someone who thinks they know it all. A fool is a person who says, I have it all figured out. I don't need to listen to anybody else. I've got it right here in my brain, or my friends and I completely agree, and so we must be right. Not taking into account a broader amount of knowledge or wisdom in their lives. And so I want to start this evening with where we began about 3 months ago, as we're at the end of this now. And I want to talk about what is wisdom, where do you find it, how do you know when somebody has it or doesn't have it, and how do you know when a person is a fool? Solomon spends a lot of time saying to us, the more you're around fools, the worse your life is going to be, pure and simple. So it's important to know what a fool is and who a fool is. So I want to pick up in Proverbs chapter 1, beginning in the first several verses. This is the center of wisdom literature. How can a person become wise? How can a young person become wise beyond their years? In Proverbs chapter 1, in verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction. This is what he wrote the book for. This is what they were collected by people over time to do. To know wisdom and instruction, to discern, to be able to know the difference between the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior. On the Sunday morning, we talked about, in chapter 26, when he was talking about a person who was a fool, a person who was a sluggard, and the fool had one thing that Solomon would say over and over and over. They would not listen to instruction. They would not receive instruction. So he begins the book by saying, to receive, verse 3, instruction in wise behavior, righteousness and justice, to give prudence to people that are foolish. And so a wise person, once you learn it, you have an interest and an ability to help other people. Verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase in learning. We're going to see in a moment, how do you determine who a fool is? A fool is someone who does not increase in knowledge. I've locked my ears off. I've locked my eyes off. I don't have any interest in learning anymore. I have it all figured out. And what happens to that person is they make the same mistake over and over and over, or they make big mistakes. And you can look back over a 10 or 20 or 50 or 60 year period of time, and you see people that have made one mistake after another in their life. The reason is they never understood wisdom, and they never learned how to accept it or receive wisdom. Look in verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. He says in the third chapter, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What do you think that means?
Trying to learn from the one we're fearful of and how to be because he got all the power. And we better try to begin learning be like a fool, but to become a little bit wiser in his, in God's ways.
So do you believe that having a healthy respect for God is important?
Directly connected. If that statement is true, then that is the first step. That is the very beginning. That without the fear of the Lord, you can't get started.
That's right. And that's the point he's making, is the beginning. The beginning point that every single person, I don't care if they're 6 years old or they're 20 years old or they're 50 years old, you begin with a healthy respect for God and for what God has to say. He talks about, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but in verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they come, say, come with us. Let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol. Kill them. Take their money. We shall find, verse 13, all kinds of precious wealth, and we'll fill our houses with spoil. In verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. What if a person was inclined to do that, could they find other people that would agree with them and other people that would think that that's a smart way to live? Absolutely. Absolutely. The world would be full of people like that. I want you to look in verse 20 now. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts up her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gate of the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, making fun of God and making fun of people who are trying to live right. And fools hate what? Why? So this is the first time that he uses the word fool. It is a word that is used 64 times. 64 times in the book of Proverbs, the word fool occurs. This is the first time. And what does he say about a person that Solomon is identifying as a fool? What does he say about them? They hate knowledge. So what makes a person hate knowledge? Actual knowledge, godly knowledge. What causes a person to hate wisdom? Okay, say it again. Okay, Earl? Verse 23, when you think about, and Jason had an excellent response to this in verse 7, the beginning of wisdom or knowledge is the fear of the Lord. If there's any one thing that would cause a normal thinking person to stand up and listen a little bit, it would be when God says to you, when you mess up, I'm going to laugh. When you fall to the bottom, I'm going to smile and I'm going to be happy. Wouldn't any logical thinking person say, that's about the last thing in the world I want? But if a person really doesn't have any respect for God or fear for God, it doesn't really matter to them. Now look at what he says in verse 24. Because I called, God said, and you refused. I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected my counsel, and I did not want my reproof. I will even laugh at your calamity. I will mock when dread comes. When dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me. And what does your book say? I'm not going to answer. They will seek me diligently, but they shall not find me. And the reason is because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They spurned, verse 30, they did not accept my counsel. They spurned all of my reproofs. So they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own desires, for the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them, but he who listens to me shall live securely and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. This is how the wisdom literature of the book of Proverbs begins. And so he lays out a path. There are two kinds of people. Two kinds of people in the world. Now I will tell you this. I have found very few people in my life that would not be scared to look at the picture of them falling headlong and God laughing about it. Most people that I know, even people that are not church-going people, they're not religious people at all, still believe that one of these days I'm going to get straight. Or one of these days, when something bad happens to me, I always have my ace in the hole, and my ace in the hole is I'm going to call on God when I need Him. That's what makes this passage to me a little bit scary. Now I want to go to chapter 26. Any comments on that before we move into our lesson for the evening? So he begins with telling us all, what does wisdom look like? He says in verse 20, it's everywhere. It shouts in the street. There is no human being. I don't care what town you live in. I don't care what country you live in, what planet you live on. There are wise people around. So having the ability to determine who is a wise person and having the desire to say, I want to hear what you have to say. And if what you have to say is different than what I'm thinking, I'm going to pause for a little while. I'm going to just back up and I'm going to just shut things down and I'm going to pause for a little while. Throughout all of the Bible, there are stories of people that were fools. Old Testament stories are crammed full. When God said to Cain, Cain who killed his brother, in the fourth chapter, God says, why you got a bad attitude? Why has your countenance fallen, the Bible says. He says, don't you realize if you straightened up, you'll be fine. But if you don't straighten up, sin is crouching at the door. He chose to become a fool, didn't he? What made Cain be a fool? He killed his brother. And then what happens is God says, because of that, you're going to be banished from the world. And he says, my punishment is too great. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. God said, I'm going to make sure nobody kills you. But you're going to be banished from the human race. He even went a conversation with God, and God saying to him, you need to listen to me, and he didn't do it. Many, many stories about that. I want to pick up, touching on where we started in chapter 26, Proverbs chapter 26. Byron, would you lead us in prayer, please?
Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for the opportunity you've given us to meet here tonight and study a portion of your word. Dear Lord, be with Brother Rick as he brings us the lesson tonight. May we be edified by this lesson. May we increase our wisdom and may we show others to Christ and how for them to increase their wisdom. Dear Lord, be with us as we go through this service and be with us as we leave this place. As we ask in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. So we have now woven through this book 25 chapters from where the first chapter started. We read a moment ago. And now we're taking a look at chapter 26. And what he's talked about throughout this book is wisdom versus foolishness. Accepting words from wise people versus saying, I've got it figured out. I know it all. In this chapter, you're going to see multiple times he says, a fool is right in his own eyes. Now, that's not uncommon, is it? Now look at this for a moment. Chapter 26. I want to begin in verse 3. A whip is for a horse and a bridle for a donkey. And a rod is for the back of fools. Look in chapter 19. Chapter 19 and verse 29. In 19:29, judgment are prepared for scoffers. A scoffer is someone that says, I don't believe in God. I don't believe that there's any such thing as hell. I don't believe that there's anything that's, that I'm doing that's going to cause me any misery in life. That would be a person who laughs or scoffs. So chapter 19 and verse 29, judgments are prepared for scoffers and blows for the backs of fools. Verse 4, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. Answer a fool according to what he deserves, lest he be wise in his own eyes. That's the problem. And so if I have a tendency of being around someone who is a fool, and it seems like I'm going along with them, it seems like I am endorsing what they're trying to do or what they believe, it is going to further the idea in their brain that I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. I know what I'm doing. I know what's going on. Look a little bit further now in verse 6. He who cuts off his own feet and drinks violence, who sends a message by the hand of a fool. In the next 6 verses, he's dealing with people that are unpredictable and consequently unreliable. So I have a message that I want sent, and I turn that delivery of that message over to a person that's a fool. Now, look what he says about that, verse 6. It's like cutting your own feet off. He says in verse 7, like the legs that hang down from the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. Verse 8, like one who binds a stone in a sling. We talked about that Sunday morning. A slingshot is something that you have a stone loose in there, and you're spinning it around, and centrifugal force is keeping it in the little sock until you turn it loose and the stone flies out. Well, what happens if you just tie the stone up and it's just sitting inside there? Well, you could just spin that thing around until you fell dead. That's how worthless tying the stone in a sling is. But he says it's just that worthless in verse 8 if you give honor to a fool. If I praise someone or I tell somebody that you've done a wonderful job and you already know or you have a tendency that they are very foolish, it's not going to be very long before you're having to apologize for that person, aren't you? And apologize for what you've done. Verse 11. Like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. What causes a person that Solomon calls a fool to continue repeating their folly? What is it? They're not willing to learn. They're not willing to listen. There's no new information or no good information. Every one of us, I'm going to tell you, there's not a human being alive that doesn't have a tendency of having filters on your ears and filters on your eyes. We all do it. And so you have a tendency of letting come into your ears what you want to come in. And you have a tendency of locking off everything you don't want to come in. That's why over and over again in Scripture he talks about when you're trying to talk to a fool, you're wasting your time. Jesus even said that to his apostles. And I've used this example several times. If you go into a house in a city where people will not listen to you, shake the dust off your feet and leave, because they're not willing to accept it. So a fool in verse 11 will repeat his folly because he's not going to receive any new information. It's not going to come in, so there's nothing else rattling around in his brain. Now look in verse 12. Do you see a man who's wise in his own eyes? You ever known anybody that was kind of wise in their own eyes? Would you agree with me that a very wise person, you picture someone, whoever you might think about, who is a very wise person, does that person normally act like they're wise in their own eyes? They will oftentimes be the most humble people you know. And they maybe have more wisdom than 10 people, but they're never going to act like or present themselves like they got it all figured out, because they're still learning. How many of you have known? We have many older Christians here that are great Bible students and have been studying their Bible 50, 60, 70 years. Why do they keep coming to church? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a valid point. They come to church because of the fear of the Lord, okay? But the simple fact is, if somebody at age 80, 85, 90 said, okay, I'm pretty much full. My brain's full. I got all I need. I just don't believe I need anymore. I think I'm just going to go out and live like a bum the rest of my life. First off, that's not how they got to where they're at. And it absolutely is a fear, the fear of the Lord. When you develop a relationship that says, it's not consistent with me, and number two, I'm too old to mess up. I don't even want the chance of getting some stinking thinking in my brain or some bad ideas in my brain that cost me in my relationship with the Lord. That's why the fear of the Lord is important. Now look what he says, verse 12. Do you see a man who's wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than him. Now he's just said many times in the last 10 chapters, there is no hope for a fool because they won't listen. But he said somebody who's wise in their own eyes, who kind of has it figured out. You're going to see that again in a minute. He said there's more hope for a fool than that. Look in verse 13 now. So we've gone away from being a fool, and so now people who collected these, and these were some of the Hezekiah's men that had put together proverbial sayings of Solomon. He's now digging into a new section, the sluggard. The sluggard said, there's a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. If a person doesn't want to work, you can create a million reasons why it's not safe, it's not good, it's not fair. Something I've heard a fair amount in my life. Even back to when I was in college and just out of college. But I've heard it more. I've heard it 50 times more in the last 5 or 7 years than I've ever heard in my life. I can't get a job in the field that I went to school in, so I'm not going to work. Until I can find a job worth my time that will pay me the amount of money that I deserve, I'm not going to work. Let me tell you, from trying to help a pretty large number of young people, let me tell you something that's real difficult. When you ask a young person to give me a resume of where you've worked and what you've done, and maybe they're 20 years old, 25, 30, maybe they're 40, and there are years of empty spaces, who's going to hire someone like that? First off, how much training do they have? Most of us had to start out digging ditches or the lowliest job in the world, but you had to prove to people, I'm a worker. You give me a job, I'll figure it out. I don't care what what it is. We've got a number of people sitting here who came from a depression era. Maybe some of you were young people, but you came out of that era. So this idea of, well, I just can't find a job that pays me as much as I deserve. So you go year after year after year, and you have nothing on your resume. But he says, a sluggard said, there's a lion in the road. Meaning, I can't go out there. I'm afraid. In verse 15, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, and he's weary of bringing it to his mouth. Now that is pretty much the definition of lazy, isn't it? Well, there's a big old bowl of food and you grab it, but you're too lazy to bring it up to your mouth. Now here's something I want you to think about in this regard. Most people I know that have been perennially out of work will tell you that they're smarter than most people. That they're wiser than the average bear. Why do you go out and work and you put all this effort in and I live fine for free? I could fill up this board right here, pretty close to filling it up, with people that I know today, I've known a long time, who basically haven't worked in their life. And in every single case, they kind of view those of you that work as fools. Now look at what he says. Look at what Solomon says next. Verse 16, the sluggard is what in verse 16? Well, that's the same thing he said about a fool. So he says a sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who could give a discreet answer. So what we talked about when we finished Sunday morning was this. When you get to looking at people that are fools, that are sluggards, that are busybodies, and that are whisperers, I'm going to talk about both of those in just a little bit. They all have one thing in common, and that is they are smarter than pretty much anybody else. That's an attitude that is developed. And so here's a person that lives off the government or lives off other people or lives off of the land, so to speak. And they actually believe that they're pretty smart. I've had this conversation, I'm going to tell you. I've had this conversation four times with people in the last 30 days who were looking for handouts, looking for food, looking for a free place to stay, who have not had a job in years. And if you have much conversation with them, what's going to come out is that they're pretty smart. And they kind of have it figured out. And anybody with half a brain would say, are you kidding me? You've got nothing. You've got nothing. You've never done anything. You've never produced anything. But at any rate, I'm going to move on to something else. So you see in this passage two categories of people that Solomon says the root issue is they're wise in their own eyes. I want you to look in verse 17. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is one who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. Yes, sir. Without a doubt. Now let me just clarify. There are events in life that cause a person to lose their job. There are events in life in the economy where somebody can't find work for 6 months or a year. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about someone who's made a career out of not working, who 10, 20, 30, 50 years has never worked. Would you agree with me that every one of us encounter enough problems in our life? I mean, anybody here would say, I'd really like to have more, personally. Could you give me some more problems than what I have? So when we start meddling in other people's problems and try to bring them in and make them ours, is that a good thing? Now, there are times that you get asked, you get invited, sometimes you get forced, especially if it's family or some kind of longtime friend, sometimes you get forced into drama that you don't want. But there is a kind of person that looks to get into other people's business. So you can imagine, a dog out here someplace. It's a pretty calm, tame little dog. It's not a bad dog, a good dog. And you grab that dog and you just shake the life out of it on his ears. What do you think is going to happen? Now look at what he says. He says in verse 17, like the one who takes a dog by the ears is one who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. There are certain things that belong to me. God put them on my plate and I have to eat them. Some of them have to do with my personality. Some of them have to do with my kinfolk, genetically, how I was made. And so I got enough stuff on my plate. And God says to me, you're going to eat that. Some of us were born with a temper. Some of us were kind of born a little bit lazy. Some of us were born with having too much energy. Those are all issues, and I can name 100 more that create problems. And you got your own. I got my own problem. So even as a preacher or an elder, if I'm going around on a regular basis, poking around and trying to get involved in everybody else's problems, what does he say? That's like taking a dog by the ears and shaking that dog. But look a little bit further, verse 17. Verse 18, like a madman who throws firebrands and arrows and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor. Now we've talked about all of these multiple times, so I'm not going into them in a lot of detail. So is the man who deceives his neighbor in verse 19 and says, was I not joking? How many times do you see people that lie, and when they get caught with a lie, what comes out, I was just kidding. Didn't you know I was teasing? I was just messing with you. I didn't really mean that. That's kind of a natural back door. I want you to think about something for a minute because it has to do with God and how God deals with us. There's one tremendous thing that the Old Testament stories teach us. Here is Rick. This is me. And issues I've had in my life. And so mistakes I made, and God's going to allow me to make those mistakes, and He's going to help me figure out, hopefully, that those were bad choices. And He's going to deal with me in my lifetime. When other people start trying to get involved and come in here and trying to get involved in my business in one way or another, that sort of mucks up things, doesn't it? I want to give you one example. In Luke, the 17th chapter, this is a passage that I use a lot in talking with people. In Luke chapter 15, there's a great story of the prodigal son. What I want you to look at for just a minute is what did not happen in this story. What did not happen? In Luke chapter 15, he says in verse 12, a younger person said to his father, Father, give me the share of my estate that falls to me. And he divided his wealth between them. Now, he didn't have to do that. The father said, okay, if you want your money, you can take it and go. He could have told his son, forget it, pal. I'm not through with it yet. When I get through with my money, I'll let you know. But here, he gave it to him in verse 13. Not many days after that, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey to a distant country. Why do you think this young man went to a distant country to get away from his family? Why did he do that? Nobody would know him. Nobody would know him. There's an old saying, you are who you are when you're out of town. And you don't think it's going to come back. Now, verse 14. Now, he'd spent everything, and a severe famine occurred in the country, and he began to be in need. And he went and attached himself to one of the citizens of that country and sent out to the fields to feed swine. Here's a Jewish boy that would have thought a pig was the most disgusting thing in the world, and he's feeding them. But eventually, he gets to the point that he's looking at what the pigs are eating, and he's jealous of what the pigs are eating. That's pretty low. In verse 16, he was longing to fill his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to himself, or he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men had more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger? I want you to look at the last part of chapter verse 16 and the first part of 17. When did this boy come to his senses? When people stopped giving him stuff. Now here's the amazing thing. So he comes to himself. He gets up. He gets to thinking about how good he had it with his father. And he said, oh, my father's slaves are doing a lot better than me. And he comes back. And the father who had been looking for him for a long way saw him. And he came up and hugged him. And you know that story. How much effort did the father spend looking for this boy as far as what we know? How much effort? This is what I'm talking about right here. So when a person has made some foolish choices in their life and because of it, they're reaping the consequences and God's helping them to come to a knowledge of wisdom. He's helping us come to ourselves. But what happens if people keep throwing mattresses underneath somebody so they don't hit the ground too hard and they keep bailing them out and keep bailing them out and keep bailing them out? What is not in that story, I'm going to tell you, is until he came to himself, his daddy didn't do anything. Are those two connected? When did he come to himself? When nobody was giving him anything. Now go back with me now to Proverbs chapter 26. And what you see happen is this in verse 17. Here's someone that's meddling with strife and other people's and things that don't belong to him, his own problems. This young boy would never, probably have never come to himself if people kept getting involved in his business. God was working on him. So what you see in this text is, I've got my own issues. I have things that were put on my plate. My health, my family, my personality. I was talking with someone recently that's known me all of my life. They were in my office and we were visiting. Several people here have known me pretty much all my life. I've said a number of times, I've heard people all my life say, man, I got in this argument with this person and I wished I had said this and I wished I had said that. When I was young, I was the guy that always thought what to say and always said it. So after about 10 years of preaching, having to spend a huge part of my life backtracking on things that I said that I shouldn't have said and acting in ways that I shouldn't have acted, I sort of came to myself. Now, nobody was going to help me. If I said something that was blunt or that was ugly from the pulpit or out in the foyer or at somebody's house, I had to eat it. You know that old saying about you better salt and pepper your words because you may have to eat them? Let's look at one other thing. Our time is running out. In verse 20, for the lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is a whisperer, contention is no whisper. Contention quiets down. What do you think a whisperer is? What is a whisperer? Gossip, okay? This is something that always scares me. When a person says, I promised I wasn't going to tell anybody this, but I'm going to tell you. It makes me want to run. Because if someone told you something in confidence and you didn't keep it, what's the chance you're going to keep what I gave you in confidence? In the world that I live in, being a preacher and an elder and then what I do on my day job, if I blew up somebody's confidence a few times, I would have been gainfully unemployed a long time ago. But here's a whisperer, and a whisperer is someone who traffics in information. I'm going to work you. I'm going to get some information out of you. I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to give that information to you, and then I'm going to work you for more information. I'm going to come over here now, and I'm going to kind of throw that out there, kind of prime the pump a little bit. I'm going to get some more information. And I do this and do this and do this and do this, and I'm telling all these stories to everybody. And what he says is this. Like a whisperer, he says in verse 20, for the lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, what happens? How do you think that works? How does that work?
It's pretty simple. When nobody's starting things up, everything's settled down.
Mm-hmm. So then he goes on to say, like, a couple more things. In verse 22, the words of a whisperer, verse 21, like charcoals of hot ember and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. People that constantly somehow cause strife. It's like a cloud that hangs over them, and everywhere they go, there's strife and contention. When I think about the Apostle Paul telling us in Philippians 4, the peace of God that passes all comprehension will guard your heart and mind. I think the older you get, older Christians get, when you see a person who just sort of causes strife and contention, you stay as far away from them as you can. You say, I got my own issues. I don't need somebody else that's going to be dumping more on my plate. Our time is up. We've got people waiting to come in. Any other comments on that? So to finish up, a fool and a person who is a sluggard and a person who is a busybody and a whisperer have one thing in common, and that is they know it all. That's how they're connected, and that's why when the men that put together the wise sayings of Solomon put them in the book, This is where they're all connected. Lord willing, we will pick up, just touching a little bit on the end of 26, and we will look at chapter 27 on Sunday morning. Appreciate your input.